Kneecaps all over America are cowering in fear as we get closer to the NFL's postseason.
Could make it into the playoffs with a 6-8 record. All they need to do is win. And the Miami Dolphins, yet again, are having their December woes. And guess what? They get to go where they've never beaten Josh Allen before, and that's Buffalo. And with me to break it all down is none other than Pro Football Network senior NFL analyst, Mr. Trey Wingo. Trey, you said as we got close to Thanksgiving, this is your favorite time of year because the playoff picture starts to come into focus. That's what's happening.
Sort of. Like, it's kind of coming into focus. Like, we know the Eagles are in. We believe the Chiefs are going to be in after they destroy the Texans this week. And there's a lot of things that are out of focus right now. And it's going to be a fascinating stretch run to the end of the regular season because there are teams that 3 or 4 weeks ago we were like, okay, have legitimate shots to make it into the postseason. And teams that we thought were shoo-ins to win their division ain't looking so good right now.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about a couple teams today that are right there. They're not there. They're right there. And we're going to see just how we feel about them. So let's get into it, okay? Because it is time to learn here in week 15 of the NFL season. And the very first team that I want to get into, Trey, is a team that we've both been very complimentary of as they look to shed their reputation. But also we've been critical. We've said it's time to win, Dan Campbell. It's time to get wins. That's what they've been doing, but is it enough, Trey, to get them into the postseason?
Yeah, I don't know yet, right? That's the best answer. What was it, believe, doubt, or need more? Might need more. I mean, I believe it's possible, but they're the Lions, so you have a lot of doubts as well. So I'm going to need to see more. But here's what I love about the Lions, okay? You know, they were terrible last year, 3-13-1. They start out 1-6. The current playoff format, which sort of dates back to 1990, I get it was tweaked in 2020 with the seventh seed in both conferences, but it's basically essentially the same thing. Since 1990, no team has started 1-6 and made the postseason. With their win this past weekend, the Lions are 6-7. Why is that significant? Well, in each of the last four seasons, at least one team that sat at 6-7 made it into the postseason. But the Lions are going to earn it. Right, they just came off a home win where they were favored by 2 points or 1.5, I think, by the time the game rolled around at Caesars Sportsbook over a really good Minnesota team. They only had two losses going into that game, but it's one thing to beat the Minnesota Vikings, who have a tragically awful defense, especially when they play off coverage. Like, I don't know why they don't press more, because, unless they don't believe in their corners at all. Like, for example, the Lions wide receivers in that game with off coverage, giving them, you know, 5 yards of separation at the line of scrimmage, I think had 17 catches out of 24 targets for 300 yards and 250 yards, something like that, and 3 touchdowns. So it's one thing. The point I'm making is it's one thing to beat the Minnesota Vikings to get to 6-7 and win for the fifth time in 6 games. It's going to be quite another to do this down the stretch, because you look at what the Lions' schedule is. They got to go to New York to take on the Jets. Now, just leaving the comforts of Ford Field and going to the Jets and playing outdoors, that's going to be a struggle. I get it. Jared Goff has gone, 181 pass attempts without an interception. Really, really good.
Yep.
But it's one thing to do that against the Vikings. It is another thing entirely to do it against the Jets. Just so people understand, even though the Jets lost to the Bills, the Jets have gone 8 straight games without giving up a 300-yard passer, 100-yard receiver, or 100-yard rusher. A fancy way of saying their defense is f***ing good. Okay? Oh, yeah. So if they're going to go outdoors, now granted, the Lions have the running attack to do it with Swift and Jamal Williams. They have the ability to pound the rock, but they're going to have to do that outdoor December weather in New York / New Jersey. So after that, they take on the Carolina Panthers, whom we will talk about momentarily.
Yes,
that's another road game. And then it gets a little better. They play the Bears in Detroit, and they finish up at Green Bay, and who knows what that mess is going to mean for the Green Bay Packers. So, like, if they go 1-1 over the next 2 weeks to head into the final 2 games of the season at 7-8, I feel pretty good about their chances. But if they lose both of these games, then I think the Lions' playoff hopes are on life support. Either way, I think it's an important thing to recognize what the Lions have done. Because Like we said, they were terrible last year. They started 1-6. You know, people talk about scheming and game planning and halftime adjustments for coaches, which is all fine and dandy, and a lot of it's just bull, okay? But by the way, halftime adjustments thing is the most overrated thing. You have 12 minutes. People are just getting a freaking sip of Gatorade and an orange slice and trying to rest for 10 minutes. You're not going through this algebraic, formulaic thing at halftime, okay? Let's just get – oh, great halftime adjustments. They really just sat on their ass and caught their breath, okay? So – one of the most important things for a head coach to do is instill belief in his team.
Yeah.
And that's where Dan Campbell has aced this test.
Oh, in spades. In spades.
Okay. They could have given up on him last year at 3-13-1. Nope. They could have given up on him when they started 1-6. Nope. The players were buying what Dan Campbell was selling. And that keeping the locker room, keeping the guys, getting them to believe in you and thus believe in themselves and what they're doing is probably the most important job a head coach has. And Dan Campbell has those guys eaten out of his hand. And he had them when the chips were down, and now he's got them when the chips are in their favor. And I think that's the most important thing I see out of Detroit. Whether or not they make the playoffs this year or not, they believe in what the system is doing for them, and you cannot give him enough credit for that.
Could not agree more. And just a quick shout out, Jean-Paul Edward de Dios. I'm rooting for the Lions, they say, and they're watching us on YouTube. So welcome DJ Dirty J and OG to our show.
It's alive. Alive.
He's right. So we're there. More like Dirty Trey, because he always brings the filthy good stats. Man, what a nice guy.
Appreciate you, boss.
So all the people watching on Twitch and watching on YouTube and all the other platforms, we welcome you. We're going to keep it going here. I'll just say this about the Lions real quick, Trey. They're averaging 0.98 points per minute of possession time. That's second best in the league behind the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott. What he's done with this offense, we think of Dan Campbell as this ground and pound, grind it out. No, this offense is high flying, and if they can get the defense figured out, even if it's into next year, they're a team that's got some staying power. So we'll see how that goes. Let's move on to our next team. This is a team that we have not really talked about at all this season, because frankly, they haven't given us a reason to, unless we wanted to laugh at them. But Trey, here's a scenario. The Cincinnati Bengals beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday, and the Carolina Panthers win their matchup against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And guess what? That means Carolina, who currently would be 6-8, is hosting a playoff game in the NFC postseason. Do you at this point believe in Carolina to get it done? Do you doubt them? Or do we need to really see more starting this Sunday?
I think we're going to need to see more. I think that's pretty clear. But I will say this. I think the Panthers story is the best story in the NFL this season.
Oh, wow.
So far. And let me explain. They gave up. Okay, the Panthers as an organization gave up. They fire their head coach. They trade away their best player in Christian McCaffrey, or at least their best offensive player in Christian McCaffrey. And the team had every reason to say, F it, you know? We lose our best offensive weapon. You fire our head coach. We play – at one point, they were on their third-string quarterback. By the way, that third-string quarterback, P.J. Walker, was in charge when they absolutely hammered Tampa Bay and the Bucs in Carolina. They had every reason to quit, literally every reason to quit, and they said, no, we're not going to. So as you mentioned, as we look at the Carolina Panthers right now, they are 5-8, one game behind the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in their division. And they have the tiebreaker right now over Tampa Bay. Only the Bucs and the Panthers have three division wins. So this is why this is the best story. Everyone else and every possible signal that the organization could be giving the team said, screw it. And the team said, screw you guys. And I'm also super happy for Steve Wilks, the interim head coach, because, you know, he left Carolina to get his first head coaching job in Arizona. And that was an unmitigated disaster. He lasted less than a year. Some of it his fault, some of it the organization's fault. You know, it was just awful. It didn't work out, but he got the short end of the stick. He never really had an opportunity. And, you know, Steve talked to our friend Mark Schlereth, who did a Panthers game. And what he said was, you know, the first time around, I was like, it's my first time as a head coach. I'm going to be really sort of very aware of what other people want to do and sort of you know, sort of adhere to what other people want. He said, F it, this time I'm doing it my way. And you could make a very compelling argument that they are a better team after they traded away Christian McCaffrey. And here's one of my favorite things about the Carolina Panthers. Let's just look at their running game since they got rid of Christian McCaffrey. Yeah. It's really, really fascinating. They're actually a better running team since they got rid of Christian McCaffrey. I'm not saying Christian McCaffrey is not a great player. He's 6-0, what the Niners are with him as a starter, 6-1 since he got to the team. The only loss was to the Kansas City Chiefs. But here's the running attack for the Carolina Panthers the last 4 weeks or this month. 47 times for 232 yards against Atlanta, 46 times for 185 yards against Denver, 46 times for 223 yards against Seattle. And Deontay Foreman facing 8-plus defenders in the box, 37% of the time, third most in the NFL, and they still find a way one with Deontay Foreman and Chuba Hubbard, okay? Yeah. So this is them. This is a team embracing their head coach's philosophy, much like we talked about with the Lions, and just saying, screw it, you know, we're going in. And like I said, they already have the win at home over Carolina, or excuse me, over Tampa Bay. So here is sort of what has to happen now going forward for the Carolina Panthers. They have the Pittsburgh Steelers this week. They should win that game because we don't know what's going on with Kenny Pickett.
Yep.
And then they play the Lions in Detroit. They're going to have to score in that game because we all know, like you said, especially at home, the Lions are a very potent offense. Then they finish up at Tampa Bay and at New Orleans. It is a real possibility that the Carolina Panthers could finish with a losing record and still win the division and host a playoff game. And it wouldn't be the first time we've seen it. The Washington then football team, now the Commanders, had the NFC East crown in 2020 with a losing record. Yep. In 2013 or 2014, I believe, Carolina Panthers went 7-8-1 and won that division with a losing record. So they've done it before. And you mentioned the Bucker Bradys, words which will never leave my mouth again.
Just for the record, we have it on film. Yeah. That came out fluently out of your mouth, my friend.
Yeah, well, so do other words, which we can't say if we want to keep up the YouTube stream. but here's why I think that they can do it. The Bucks are facing the Bengals this week. Okay, yeah. Bengals are red hot. They've won 5 in a row. They've covered 10 of their last 11 games. They're a 3.5-point road favorite. The Bucks played the 49ers last week, and the 49ers played the Seahawks on Thursday night. Do you know what teams that played the 49ers the previous week, you know what their record is the next week?
I know it's not good.
1-11.
Oh, I didn't know it was that bad.
1-11. And teams that lose to the 49ers the next week are 0-8.
Wow.
Teams that win are 1-3. By the way, the only team to win in their next game after playing the San Francisco 49ers, the Kansas City Chiefs. And they had the benefit of the bye week, by the way. They played the 49ers and got their bye week, which is a fancy way of saying when you play the Niners, they beat the living crap out of you. Yeah. Like it's a physical beatdown, not only defensively, but offensively with the way they run and the way they hammer you with that running game. So I'm not expecting much from Tampa Bay this week when they have to play a red hot Cincinnati team at home after losing to San Francisco, getting thumped by San Francisco, which is why I think there's a real possibility that the Carolina Panthers could be tied for the division lead and actually have first place because of virtue of the tiebreaker, the way this weekend goes, if they take care of the Steelers and the Bucks can't handle the Bengals.
It is a wild turn of events. And another team that won their division with a losing record, the year of the Beastquake, when the
7-9. And then they just ran over the defending champion Super Bowl Saints in that Saturday playoff game.
Yeah, quite literally. So there's not only precedent for it happening, there's precedent for them maybe even stealing a game in the playoffs too. And like you said, with Dan Campbell, Steve Wilks, there is something to be said when the guys in the locker room rally around the guy leading them. That means something. You can't measure it. There's no analytics for it except the wins that happen on Sunday. So we'll see how that goes. Now, the next team, the final team we're going to talk about in this segment, Trey, team we talked about last week, team we talked about a lot. They played on Sunday Night Football. The Miami Dolphins lost I'm not going to call it a crucial game to the Los Angeles Chargers, but it was a show me game that they failed to show much of anything. And you have said this all season, that defense on the road is Dr. Jekyll to the Mr. Hyde that they have at home. Yeah. It was a game where they had to show that they belonged with the best of the best, and they weren't playing the best of the best. Chargers are not that, and they lost quite handily, Trey. Do you still believe in the Dolphins going into Buffalo this week? Do you now have doubt, or are we still in a need more phase?
Well, let me parse this out. Do I believe in the Dolphins going into Buffalo specifically this weekend? Is that can I?
Well, I mean, my opinion, Trey, is if they lose this game, there's a lot. They got a lot of heavy lifting to do to make a postseason run.
Here's the way I can answer that honestly. I believe they're limping into the postseason.
Okay.
But I have zero faith in them this weekend.
Okay.
First of all, like you said, they're on the road. They didn't give up 27 points against the Chargers on the road for the first time in seven games. They had gone six straight games with the defense giving up at least 27 points. And at least the NFL came out and said that roughing the passer call on Phillips was just complete and total. I mean, I can't believe that call. It was just awful. And they need to fix that. And maybe the NFL will actually take a look at it because, you know, Grady Jarrett and Chris Jones would be like, thank you. These calls are ridiculous. Yeah. But they are, as my good friend Mark Schlereth likes to say, baby poop soft defensively when they go on the road. And now they're going to Buffalo. They've won exactly one time in Buffalo since 2012. The game time temperature is going to be about 26 degrees, and they're expecting several inches of snow. Here's where I tell you that the Dolphins, when the game time temperature at any game is below 40 degrees at kickoff, they've lost eight in a row, including playoffs. And the average margin of victory, or for the Dolphins, margin of loss in those eight straight games is 20 and a half points. So they don't just lose in cold weather. They get their doors blown off. And I get it. This is a different Dolphin team with Mike McDaniel and Tyreek and Waddle. None of that is going to matter in several inches of snow and 26 degrees. The only way Miami wins this game in Buffalo is if they abandon the passing game and go to Wilson and Mostert and play keep away with Buffalo, and it may not be enough. Because as good as Buffalo is, they have two real weaknesses. They don't have a running game. They don't. Josh Allen was the leading rusher in the win over the Jets with 47 yards. And he's the second leading rusher in the NFL, like 20 yards behind Devin Singletary. And without Von Miller, they don't have a closer. They don't have like Gregory Rousseau has played really well, but they don't have the Von Miller type presence, and he's gone. He's not coming back. So again, like I said, I spent 6 years in St. Louis. Missouri is the show me state. So until Miami shows me they can find a way to grind out a game on the road, specifically in cold weather and bad conditions, I have zero faith in them. Now, because of their record, they may only need one more win to get into the postseason. And they are playing the Packers in Miami. But other than that, after they're at Buffalo, then home for the Packers, then they're in New England, and then they close out with the Jets. One more win might be enough to punch their ticket into the postseason. And they'll probably get that one win. I'm sure they want to, but I don't have any faith in them this weekend in Buffalo.
Yeah, and like you said, even if they get that one win, they will certainly be limping into that postseason. Trey, we mentioned that Detroit was number two in points per minute of possession. That spot going into this past week was held by the Miami Dolphins. They've fallen all the way back to fifth now following that game against the Los Angeles Chargers.
I mean, at one point, Tua was 3 of 15 in that game. Like, the only reason it was a game is the Tyreek fumble.
Yeah, 25 yards at halftime.
The fumble recovery. Like, they were getting their asses kicked, and they got a freak play to keep them in it. And then the Chargers, of course, and they let people hang around.
Right. It was a really interesting game to watch. And the biggest thing, Trey, that came from it for me, especially because you had been talking about all the different stats about the Dolphins' defense on the road, and they gave up 50% on third down, conversions to the Chargers offense, and they just couldn't get off the field. And just to put that into perspective, the best team in the NFL on third down is the Chiefs at 51%. Okay. Conversion. No other team is above 50, and they gave up 50 to the Chargers. You're just not going to win football games doing that. And the last thing I'll say on this game before we move on, we bring in our good friend Arif Hassan, who's here to talk about the Eagles, is to the NFL media, to the broadcast teams, and specifically to NFL Network, please stop with the infantization of the relationship between Mike McDaniel and Tua. If we got to hear one more time that coaching Tua is Mike's greatest thing he's ever done in his life,
The infantization, is that a word?
Yeah. Yes. It's like you're infantasizing. You're making Tua seem like this fragile little baby who needs to be coddled by Mike McDaniel all the time.
I am calling bullshit on you right now. I'm looking up the word infantasize.
Look it up.
Did you say infantasize?
Infantasize. Yeah.
It's
like doing Tua this disservice that he's some fragile little baby that Mike McDaniel is nursing back to health each and every week. What happens if Mike McDaniel gets fired?
I see infantil size, but you said infantasize. Infantilize. Treat someone as a child and or which way the maturity or age and age of experience. Okay. Infantilize. Not infantasize. Okay. Got it. I was willing to concede that you were expanding my horizons until you.
I came close. I was off by
Matt Cannata. I don't know who this guy is. Said pull out the Scrabble challenge.
Who is that guy?
Some loper that just logged into the freaking chat room. Who knows?
Message
board Matt. Who knows?
I am serious. Kidding. It's every single time the Dolphins are on TV, they get Mike on the side and say, Mike, you know, talk about how coaching Tua is the greatest thing you've ever done in your career. Do we get it? Brian Flores didn't like him, didn't believe in him. Tua is struggling. Mike's the greatest thing ever. Tua is a, you know, but enough. We get it. Tua is a grown man. He's an NFL quarterback. Let's treat him like a pro.
Yep. Fair enough.
All right, moving on. But actually, before we move on, let me just say this too about Pickett, because I've got in the three teams we talked about, I've got the Panthers winning in my betting model. You can follow that on Pickett. I've got the Lions winning this week in my betting model. You can follow that on Pickett. And I have got the Dolphins losing to the Buffalo Bills. I got the Bills winning in my betting model. You can
way to go out on that limb there. Way to go out on that limb.
Follow that on Pickett. And everything, I am betting every single game this week. Every single game in week 15 has gone through my betting model. You can find that at Pickett. You can also follow my Thursday night preview using my betting model. Coming out on Pro Football Network tomorrow for Thursday Night Football. But you can track the betting model's record. I'm 77-39-5 this NFL season with this betting model. All of those stats and your stats too are on Pickett. You download that for free. Click the link in the comments. It's right there. Or if you go to it on your own, use promo code PFN365. And it's a free app. Track your bets, especially when you're betting at Caesar Sportsbook, which is what Trey and I do. Trey's on Pickett too. Follow him.
That's correct. Let's go.
So we got all these things going on, so make sure you do that. And you can hold me to account when I give you bad advice. But remember, you bet on your own free will. Okay. That being said, let's bring in our good friend, lead NFL analyst for Pro Football Network, Arif Hasan. Wow. Trey, and
it's applause? A sitting O, not a standing O. I just don't feel like getting up.
Did you just clap for him?
I did clap.
I never get applause.
Oh, okay, hold on. Hey, Brett,
he doesn't want to infantilize you. Which
there it is.
Someone was listening.
You get the show, as my friend said.
Someone was paying attention. Okay. Arif, we are here because you put out an article earlier this week talking about the Eagles sitting at top of the NFL. And Trey, earlier in the year, we talked about the Eagles. They were winning there. I think they were 6-0 or 7-0, 8-0 at the time. And we still weren't sold on them being the dominant team. We were still, you know, all in on the Chiefs. Even when the Chiefs played the Bengals, guys, we talked about maybe the Bengals are the best team. Still not giving it to
them. They are, by the way.
Okay, well, here. Are we still not saying the Eagles are the best team at the top in the NFL?
The best team in the NFC, for sure.
Okay.
For sure.
Here's why I found them so compelling, especially after week 14.
Okay.
There are teams with higher talent ceilings. And certainly
Time out. This is breaking news. Arif, do you have a problem with Turkey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We got comments coming in now that you're on the show.
Other topics are now.
Does Arif
everything
like
else
now?
Does not matter.
So there's some lore here. So my Twitter handle basically every November changes to Arif Hasan hates turkey because I evangelize against using turkey at Thanksgiving. I think there are better meats that you can use. I think that you can do yourself a lot of favor by preparing you know, meats that you're more used to preparing. And there's a reason that we don't generally eat turkey outside of Thanksgiving. It's because it's not
Well, first of all, that, sir, wrong. You are wrong, sir. I eat turkey all the time. Turkey burgers, turkey subs, turkey sandwich, whatever. I eat turkey all the time.
Is it a health thing or a taste thing?
I like the taste of turkey.
That's not what
As
I asked.
Adam Sandler once said, love to eat turkey.
Is the reason that you started eating a bunch of turkey burgers related to health or related to taste?
A little bit of both, but I've eaten turkey my whole life. I've never once said in my life, oh, turkey. Spam? Sure. Meatloaf? Sure. Pot roast? Gross. Absolutely, but I've never gone.
Okay. Well, oh, just like turkey. Pot roast, I'm just not going to be able to reason with them about
turkey food. Cheese roll ups are wonderful. You just take a piece of cheese, roll some turkey meat around, and boom.
Okay.
There you go.
He's making my argument for me as to why you can't trust him. This is fantastic.
I don't think I am.
Arif, I'm sorry that I totally took the show off the rails with this question, but I'm stunned to just, you know, see that.
Well, wait, before you get into this, where are you on turkey, pro or con, Brett?
Oh, I'm pro. But I'm pro turkey at Thanksgiving. I cannot.
Well, no. But see, Arif's giving you that. What he's saying is you should never eat turkey outside of Thanksgiving. Do you eat turkey outside of Thanksgiving?
I do not roast a turkey.
Outside. No one asked if you roasted a turkey. It's a very simple question. Does turkey enter your mouth at any other time besides Thanksgiving? This is
you
not difficult.
You can't handle the truth.
Well, you can't handle the question, apparently. Do you eat turkey at all outside of the month of November?
I do.
Okay, there it is. Like end of discussion.
I mean, it sounds like there might be like deli slices of turkey sandwich.
It is.
Yeah, okay.
I do like a nice prime rib at Christmas. All right, moving on. But, now...
This is the guy that runs the company, by the way. I'm just pointing that out. This is the guy who's in charge of the frickin' company.
Back to another bird, the Philadelphia Eagles. Okay. We're not roasting them on Thanksgiving, but Arif, top of the league for you. Tell us why.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Franklin wanted the national bird to be a turkey. It is, in fact, an eagle. So let's talk about that for a little bit.
WKRP in Cincinnati, greatest line ever. God is my witness. I thought turkeys could fly. Kids look it up.
So the Philadelphia Eagles are an immensely talented team, but there are other teams that have higher talent ceilings that on a particular day can play better. I think the Bengals are one of those teams. I think the Chiefs are one of those teams. I think the Dallas Cowboys are one of those teams. I think the Bills are one of those teams. There are teams that can play and have played better than the Eagles. But the thing with the Eagles is that they are consistent. None of the teams I just mentioned are consistent. And when you have a bunch of one series playoffs, essentially a bunch of one game series, right in the playoffs, it pays to be consistent. More often than not, a team that plays the same game in, game out is going to win the Super Bowl than a team that is inconsistent. We have some exceptions. The Rams last year are a great exception, right? They finished the season pretty poorly.
The Bucks the previous year started 7-5 and then didn't lose again.
The Bucks are weird because Tom Brady, when he's good, usually turns it on after Thanksgiving. Oh, like it's just kind of speaking of Thanksgiving. So that one is a bit unusual. But I mean, just take a look at those Patriots teams that win year in and year out. They're a pretty consistent unit, especially on defense, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I wanted to write about the Eagles, because they were the Week 14 team, aside a little bit from the Bengals that they had some trouble in the first quarter. They were the Week 14 team among the top contenders that actually played really well. And the only other team that played really well that people have as Super Bowl favorites are the 49ers. And I love how Brock Purdy played, but I am just not going to trust Mr. Irrelevant until he proves he's relevant, right? It's tough to take a one-game sample. So for me, the team to trust week in, week out is the Eagles. And that's the team to me that is the most dangerous to win a Super Bowl.
That's great logic, and I cannot fault it. And the thing that I love about the Eagles is that you know, Bill Belichick has a line, which is he loves to say to his team, he said, boys, we have a lot of different ways to win. Okay. The Eagles have a lot of different ways to win. Yeah. Just give you an example. Before the Giants game, the last 2 weeks, they run for 300 and something yards and beat the Packers. Then against the Titans, they run for literally 300 yards less. They rush for 67 yards, about 300 yards less. And Jalen Hurts throws for 386, and they beat the Titans by 25 points. And then they did what you want any good team to do. You're playing an inferior opponent on the road. Freaking bury them. Bury them early. Steal their heart. cut it out, and then just run up the score. And that's exactly what they did. You are 100% right. Yeah. What you do to a turkey, just stab it in the heart, then eat it. and they did that. They did that. I have no issues with the Philadelphia Eagles. I just, if I'm being honest, I think the Bengals' best might be better than anybody's, but the Bengals' best isn't always there. And again, they may not make the playoffs. Their schedule is so brutal. If they beat the Bucs, I feel better about it this weekend. And we mentioned why the Bucs are in real trouble because they played San Francisco last week. But here's the thing where I'm going to throw something out that sounds crazy. It would be in the Eagles' best interest to lose at least one more game.
Whoa,
before the regular season starts.
Why is that?
Before the regular season is over. Here are the greatest regular season teams in the last 25 years in the NFL. Okay? The 2015 Carolina Panthers, 15-1. Number one scoring offense in the league. Lost Super Bowl 50. 2011 Green Bay Packers, 15-1. Lose in their first home playoff game, the divisional round, to the New York Giants, who went on to win their second Super Bowl over the Patriots under Tom Coughlin. 2007 New England Patriots, undefeated, 16-0. Lose Super Bowl 42 to the Giants. 2004 Pittsburgh Steelers, 15-1. Ben Roethlisberger's rookie year. AFC home game against the Patriots, get their kicked. Deion Branch is waving bye-bye to the Steelers fans out of Heinz Field. And maybe the best regular season team that nobody talks about, the 1998 Minnesota Vikings.
Oh, I went
15-1.
Harris
set a record. Is he from Minnesota? Hart.
Yeah.
He lives
in Minnesota. So, you know, from Minnesota. 15-1. Yeah. I set the record at that time for the most points scored in a season. I believe they outscored their opponents that year by an average of 14 points a game. Like, didn't just win, kicked people's. And
you had to bring up kicking,
speaking of kicking, lose in the NFC title game to the Dirty Bird Falcons because Gary Anderson misses the first kick all year. He had missed a field goal or an extra point all year, missed a field goal that would have won the game. They go to overtime and lose to the Atlanta Falcons in the NFC championship game. So being great in the regular season, like historically great in the regular season, has not been a good thing for teams going into the postseason. Philadelphia, I'm begging you, if you want to win the Super Bowl, lose a game. Do not finish 16-1 or you're screwed.
Wow.
Well, we've never had a 16-1 team. That's different. Sure. That's different than 15-1.
But I tell you what.
You
we
bet.
We never had a 16-0 team until the Patriots. Yeah. And then that did not end up
so just well have two losses. That's all. Philadelphia, if you lose two games, God bless you. I think you're good. But if you lose one, you are effed.
So Trey, for you, how big is not this week, but next week's matchup against the Cowboys for the Eagles? I mean, that's conceivably the only game left on their schedule that they could lose.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, they almost lost to the Colts. So, I mean, they could lose any game. I mean, if Matt Ryan doesn't take one of the worst sacks I've ever seen on first down and goal to go with a chance to go up by two scores, the Colts probably win that game. But yeah, you're right. And Micah Parsons already just mouthing off about Jalen Hurts. Like, dude, like, I get it. You're historically great through first two seasons. Shut up. Just shut up.
Shut up. That's what they told the Eagles.
Will the Eagles have anything to play for on that Cowboys game? I mean, they're basically
on New Year's Eve. Yeah, they're the first team to clinch a playoff berth, but they haven't clinched anything else.
Yeah, but by then it's so difficult for me to imagine another team getting close enough to nab the one seed from them. It's just really
right. Funny. But let's just play devil's advocate, right? Let's say that the Eagles win. Who are they playing this week? They're playing the.
They are playing.
They're not playing anyone of substance. Otherwise, I would know. Who are they playing?
It looks like the Bears. I can't wait.
Oh, they're playing the Bears.
That's correct.
They're playing the Bears, all right? Now, granted, the Bears could give them trouble because the Eagles' run defense is their one weakness and nobody runs for more yards than Justin Fields and the Bears. But let's assume they beat the Bears, and let's assume the Cowboys beat the Jaguars. Not exactly a given the way Jacksonville is playing, but let's assume that happens. So it's 13-1 against 10-3, right? Mm-hmm. And then if the Cowboys win, it's 13-2 against 11-3. There has to be a scenario in which that – things could still be afloat after that if the Eagles lose out and the Cowboys win out. So,
that's it.
It is mathematically possible that they don't have the one seed, but by the time we get there, the reality probably is
Are you?
I'm just saying for the next game, it's going to mean something. It's going
Reaper,
to mean something.
Reaper, are you out on your Vikings having a chance at taking that spot from them?
Have you been you listening to me talk about the Vikings?
I've been after your following to come after. They are terrible on defense.
I've been a huge skeptic of the Vikings basically all season, and for most of the year I've looked kind of silly because they keep on winning these games. I keep saying that they're probably going to lose, but I don't think the Vikings are as good as a 10-3 team should be. Right? That's not to say they're not good. Right?
That's fair.
Good. But, you know, gunning for the number one spot, that is it is a relatively easy schedule from here. If you consider, you know, the Packers are on their schedule, you consider them to be, you know, one of the easy teams, which at this point, I think we can say that. But, you know, it's like the Colts, the Bears, the Packers. You know, there's not a lot left for the Vikings to be worried about. So that's the benefit. But the problem is, you know, the Vikings, yeah, it's great that they played, you know, some one score games against some good teams, right? Like, you know, like the Bills. They're also playing one score games against bad teams. Right. And they're letting those teams get in.
They don't finish anybody. All those games. Like they were up big on the Bears at US Bank Stadium. And suddenly it was a one score game and they needed Cameron Dantzler to come up with amazing turnover to finish that game. They don't finish anybody off. They don't.
Yeah, absolutely not. And the ways that they end up winning these games are just not things that you can like repeat. Like, you know, forcing a fumble because you know how your former teammate carries the ball. That's probably not going to happen. The ability of like Chris Boyd, the punt gunner, forcing a fumble on Amir Smith-Marset, that is not a repeatable event, I think. So, and there's been a lot of like special teams muffs and turnovers and late in the fourth quarter that have been a big part of their wins. So I don't think that the Vikings are as good as two seeds typically are. The good news for the Vikings is the NFC is not as good as it typically is. So in the playoffs, the Vikings might be able to make some noise, but getting to the one seed would be really, really difficult for me to imagine. Also, losing the two seed would be difficult for me to imagine. Mathematically, it'd be very difficult for them to lose the two seed.
Yeah, yep. Well, and thank God the Cowboys are in the Eagles division with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
For what it's worth, Arif, I do have the Vikings winning by at least six on Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts. So hopefully your followers don't come for me too. All right, Eagles, Turkeys, Vikings, we've covered it all. You can read everything that Arif writes. And by the way, Arif, I'm disappointed.
Put more on turkeys.
I was going to say, I'm disappointed we didn't get a turkey type of power.
Hold on. Before we push this aside, I have to know, Arif, what is your meat of choice?
On Thanksgiving?
Time out. Yes. I want to know that.
We understand that Thanksgiving is turkey, blah, blah, and you blocked it out. So my question is, what is your meat of choice if turkey is 743rd on the list? Chupacabra? I mean, what? Like Yeti?
It changes, you know, every couple of months. Right now I'm on a pork belly kick. I think the pork belly is fantastic.
Okay, I just got to say, pork bellies. I've got a strange feeling about that. Trading Places, 1983. Look it up, kids. There you go.
Not just football stats, guys. Wow. Not just football stats. Pork bellies. You get it all from Trey. Speaking of getting it all, you can get all of Arif's work over at ProFootballNetwork.com. He puts out daily articles. We've got great opinion pieces, news pieces, evergreen pieces. Go check it out, ProFootballNetwork.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Arif Hassan NFL. Arif, we will see you next week. Till then.
Cheers, my friend.
That phone was in turkeys.
Looking forward to it. See you then.
Okay, guys, the Eagles. Well,
you think you know somebody, and then they drop I hate turkey card. I mean,
I know. I saw.
I'm going to follow him just to troll him on turkey.
There you go. The Eagles, by the way, are among the favorites for the Super Bowl over at Caesar Sportsbook. Make sure you go place your bets. If you're going to place them, do it there. Over at Caesar, that's where I bet. If you follow me on Pickett, you know that all of my bets go through the Caesar Sportsbook, and you know our very own Trey Wingo is their very own Chiefs Trends officer. So when he's giving you stats and numbers, you know it's the real deal. Go do that now. If you're a first-time bettor at Caesars, make sure you use promo code PFNCZR. We got you a great offer direct from Caesars to you. If you lose on your first bet, you're going to get 100% of that bet back as a free bet. And that's up to $1,250. And whether you win that bet or lose, you'll also get a 1,000 reward credits and 1,000 tier credits, which are exclusive to Caesar Sportsbook. So again, That's promo code PFNCZR for first-time bettors at Caesar Sportsbook. Promo code in the comments at YouTube, Twitch, and everywhere else that you're watching this show. Trey,
yeah,
we got a triple header for the Super Smash quarterback matchups of the week, given to you and us by the great people over at Underdog Fantasy. Let's roll the first one. All right, this aptly named last chance. Is this the Dolphins and Tua Tagovailoa's last chance to make a statement, or will they be limping into the postseason, Trey? Tua, Josh Allen, what do you make of this matchup?
What do I make of it? We've already talked about this, like screwed. The Dolphins are screwed this week. They're done. And it has nothing really to do with either Josh or Tua.
Yeah.
It's just the elements and how these teams perform. I mean, like the Bills, like, by the way, can I just tell you how much I love Josh Allen? Because, you know, I don't know if you remember, I can't remember, it's Jerry somebody up in Buffalo. He's a longtime sports writer up there.
Oh, Jerry Sullivan. Jerry Sullivan.
When the Bills got run over in that Monday night game where the wind was howling like 30 miles an hour the entire game, and Mac Jones, I think, threw it three times last year, and the Bills got destroyed. Jerry Sullivan's question to the defense was, are you embarrassed by that performance? Are you embarrassed? And Micah Hyde and Jordan Poy were like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, no, we're not embarrassed. Like, we got a kick. We'll get better. And they did. They got better. And it was a question. It was a bait question to get a good quote out of them so he could scribble something down. He did it again this past week after the Jets held Josh Allen to, what, 147 yards. By the way, the Jets hold everybody numbers. Okay. It's what they do. And Jerry, what's his last name?
Sullivan.
Sure. That guy, Jerry said, well, I don't think this is a offense that can win a Super Bowl. And Josh Allen's response was okay. Like, cool. Didn't even acknowledge it. And by the way, if you're a longtime Buffalo beat writer, how the hell do you know what a Super Bowl winning offense looks like? Cause you've never seen one. Okay.
Okay. So, I mean,
that guy is a clown parade.
Got you riled up, huh?
Well, it's just so dumb. Like, the only reason you say that to Josh Allen, just a little tip, guys. The only reason you, as a reporter, you say, because you want to get him to say something inflammatory. You're like, oh, this is great. I'll get him and I'll get a quote. Instead of asking an honest question or asking a question that can be critical, why did you struggle against the Jets defense? Which is a fair question, right? Mm-hmm. Why? What problems did the Jets give you? Why couldn't you overcome? Those are all fair. But to throw out an opinion as a question, which really wasn't a question, more than a statement that you wanted him to react to. I don't think you guys have a Super Bowl winning offense. I don't think you've ever seen a Super Bowl winning offense in all your years covering the Buffalo Bills, because wait for it, they've never won one, okay?
Yeah.
So I hate that. I freaking hate
you are, okay? you, when you're doing that, right, you're doing that in service to yourself.
You're doing it as a service to yourself. It's not to your readers. It's not. You're doing it as a service to yourself to make you look like some hot shot that you got him. Yeah. Gotcha. And Josh Allen's like, okay, cool. Moving on. Perfect answer. Perfect answer. So anyway, all that aside, look, there's no reason to like Tua and the Dolphins in this matchup. There just isn't. It's not to say he's not a good quarterback. Not to say they're not a good team. It's not to say they're not going into the playoffs. There is literally no reason to like the Dolphins going into this game. Now, if they win, fantastic. But with all the data, there is literally no reason to say, all in on Tua Tagovailoa and the Dolphins in this one.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I don't see how you're picking the Dolphins to win the game. But based on the way the Bills' offense is, I could see why you would pick Josh Allen to not have a massive amount of passing yards. Because as you've noted, he's their leading rusher most of the time. They need him to be running the ball. A lot of that offensive opportunity goes to him. The Dolphins' defense on the road is a wreck. Here's where Underdog has set the passing yards at for these players, higher or lower. For Tua, higher or lower, 242.5 passing yards. For Josh Allen, that number is 231.5 passing yards.
I have one slimmer of hope for the Miami Dolphins.
Oh, tune in. Dolphins.
Right now at Caesars Sportsbook, the Dolphins are a 7.5-point underdog.
Yep.
The last time the Bills covered when they were laying more than 7 points against the Dolphins, you want to take a guess when that was?
Bill, man, when would they have been a 7-point favorite against Miami? I don't know.
November of 1967.
Okay, that would be about the right time.
That's the last time Buffalo covered as a favorite of 7 or more against the Dolphins. It's a 4-game stretch over a long period of time. The point is, you know, it may be closer than you think, but all the metrics and all the data indicate a Buffalo Bills win.
My model does have Miami covering. It also is telling me to take Tua on the lower than 242.5 yards at underdog and Josh Allen on the higher than 231.5 passing yards.
And the other part of this we have to acknowledge is that while that's a long stat over a variety of different teams, let's talk about this team specifically. It's a primetime game.
Yeah.
Buffalo has eaten in primetime games. They're 4-0 this year in primetime games, 3-1 against the spread, winning those games by almost 20 points. The average margin of victory in their 4 primetime games this season has been 19.8 points.
Josh Allen comes alive when the lights come on. Yeah. And just real quick, too, the Dolphins-Chargers game last week, Justin Herbert threw for the most yards he had all season against the Dolphins defense.
350-something, right?
367. Yeah. So bodes well for Josh Allen taking higher than 231.5 yards in underdog. And with Tua, I'm going higher than 242.5. So two hires. Let's get to our second matchup of Week 15 presented by Underdog Fantasy. Ice cold killers. Trey, I'll never forget the story you told during Joey Burrow's draft
prep. AAU basketball team.
AAU basketball
team. Greatest story ever.
Basically making Joe Burrow akin to Dexter the serial killer.
Yeah, for those that don't know, we'll cut it really short. Please. But when Joe Burrow was a 13-year-old on an AAU basketball team, his team was down like by 8 points with 30 seconds to play. And they came back and won. Joe Burrow scored all the points, including, I think, 7 straight free throws, ice in his veins. And his coach was a sociology professor at Ohio University. And after the game, he went up to Joe's parents and said, just so you know, your kid is different. He has a dissociative property that essentially means whatever the situation is, his blood pressure and his pulse doesn't rise. It's something you see in first responders and serial offenders. In other words, Joe Burrow could be for good or he could kill people and no one would ever know. That's sort of the analogy. And he is a cold-blooded assassin.
And we've seen Tom Brady also be a cold-blooded assassin throughout his 20-plus year career. And that's who the two quarterbacks are in this matchup. However, Trey, I have a feeling you don't think this is going to be a quarterback duel in this one.
No, I mean, like the Bucks have to prove that they can win a big game. Okay? Like, let's go through the entire season. San Francisco 49ers, big game. They fall flat. Earlier in the season in October, Kansas City Chiefs come to Tampa Bay, big game. Freaking Chiefs put up 40 plus on the Bucks, who at that time had the second best scoring defense in the NFL. Go look at the Bucks schedule. Where is their win that makes you go, aha? Where is their win? They took down this team. They're good. I don't see it. And this is the last gasp for them. If they win this game at home, they have a legitimate shot of pulling away from the rest of the NFC South. But if they don't, game on, fellas. Game frickin' on. The only good news for the Bucs in this situation is that the Bengals come in as, what, a 3.5-point favorite? That is the first time since 2020 that Tom Brady led team, a team quarterback by Tom Brady is getting points at home. And being a home dog in his career, Tom Brady is 8-3 straight up and 10-1 against the spread as a home underdog. The only quarterback with a better record in the Super Bowl era with at least 10 starts as a home dog is Ben Roethlisberger, who went 10-2 straight up. But so if Tom Brady is indeed as pissed off as he said he was, you know, he signed that interception ball for Dre Greenlaw, didn't want to, but he did it and all this kind of stuff. If pissed off Tom Brady shows up, they have a chance to win. But if pissed off Tom Brady doesn't show up, the Bengals will continue to roll.
Yeah, if it's half retired Brady, as we've seen too often from
most of this season,
then it'll be tough. Trey, here's the underdog stat projections for these guys. You can go higher or lower. 280.5 passing yards for Joe Burrow against Tampa Bay, and that number for Tom Brady is higher or lower than 263.5. My model says to go with Joe Burrow going over 280.5 passing yards. I have a feeling, Trey, with everything we know about Joe Burrow, he smells blood in the water to get his team into good seating. He knows he's got a tough schedule coming up. I think he continues to show out.
Yeah, but here's the deal. Burrow and Zach Taylor do not give a single flying you-know-what about stats. Yes. They're going to do what's necessary to win. And over the last few weeks, it has been much more about the running game than it has been the passing game for the Bengals. I mean, Samaje Perine wore the Chiefs out.
He did.
Like, you know, Joe Mixon came back last week, but Samaje still got the bulk of the carries. Like, in December, especially on the road, now granted it's Tampa, so you don't have really bad weather or cold weather, but give me a two-headed running attack behind an offensive line that has finally come together, which was a weak link to start the season. This is why I believe the Bengals' best is better than anybody's. Their best is better than anybody's right now.
That rushing attack, something to keep in mind as you put that higher or lower play in there for Joe Burrow, that 280.5 passing yards mark. So we will we'll see how that goes. We got one more. We're giving the three this week, Super Smash QB matchups presented by Underdog Fantasy. Let's see what we got. On the move, two teams sitting at 7-6. The Titans playoff position at this point is pretty safe because they're in the
AFC South. Is it? You really believe that?
The only team that could catch them is the Jaguars.
Why won't they catch them? They kicked the out of them in Nashville last week, ending a 9-game losing streak in Nashville. They ended a 14-game division road losing streak, and the Titans, to me, are irrevocably broken right now.
Yeah.
They have one way to win. Like, Derrick Henry went off in the first half against Jacksonville, had 119 yards.
Nothing.
Two rushing yards in the second half. I get it. Some of that was because they were behind, but that's the problem for Tennessee. They have one way to win.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry gives us the lead, and then we can wear you down with our running game and choke you out defensively. If that doesn't happen, like, Tennessee has been sitting pretty for a while. And you and I have said this, they're going to win that division. I can't say that anymore. Now, if the Jaguars get boat raced by the Cowboys on Sunday,
right,
it's going to be much more difficult. All right, but let's take a look just real quickly, if you don't mind, at the Tennessee Titans, the Jacksonville Jaguars schedule down the stretch. I know we're talking about Tennessee, but Jacksonville, again, they beat them by 14 last week. All right. Jacksonville is what, one game behind in the division now, or two?
Two.
It's two games, okay? They've already beaten Tennessee once. If they get – the next two games are critical for Jacksonville. Jacksonville plays the Cowboys in Jacksonville. Then they got to go to the Jets. Let's say they split those games.
Yeah.
Their next two games at Houston, they're going to win that game. I'm going to say the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to win that game.
And
the final game of the year is Tennessee in Jacksonville. Like, that could be for everything.
Yeah,
for Tennessee. I am no longer sold on the Tennessee Titans winning the NFC South, even though they sit in first place at 7-6. Here's their schedule for the remainder of the year. massive game. This is the Chargers' hardest game left on the schedule by a mile. Okay. Then they've got Houston, and then the Titans have to play Dallas, and then they finish up at Jacksonville. Like, okay, can you see them losing to the Chargers?
I have them losing to the Chargers.
Okay, so that drops them to 7-7.
Yep.
Then they play the Cowboys. Can you see them losing to the Cowboys?
I have them losing to the Cowboys.
That's 7-8.
Yeah.
Or no, then 8-8 because I'm giving them the Texans. I'm giving them the Texans after that. That's 8-8 going into the final game of the year in Jacksonville. Both teams could be 8-8 by the time they go into that game in Jacksonville.
Even if Jacksonville's a game back going into that game, a win gives them the tiebreaker.
Correct, because even if they're a full game back going into that game, if they win, both teams will finish 8-9, and they will have swept the season series. Yep. Jacksonville is not out of this at all, and Tennessee is leaking oil worse than a 1938 Model T right now.
Wow. Well, this is why we call this matchup on the move, because the Titans are moving in the wrong direction, and if the Chargers win this game, Trey...
You're going the wrong way!
Look it up, kids. The Chargers, if the Chargers win this game, Trey, they're squarely in the playoff picture. They are in a playoff seed, and then they control their destiny.
Yeah, the Chargers at 7-6, okay? And this is their last tough game. Now, I get it. Denver is weird. Like, they put up 28 on the Chiefs because the Chiefs just played with their food when they were up 27-0. And Patrick Mahomes threw a couple of really careless interceptions, actually three of them. And he said it after the game. He said, I got to be better. They bailed me out, which is why I love Mahomes. He threw for 300+50 yards against the number one of the best defenses in football and scored three touchdowns on ridiculous plays. He's like, I suck today. Like, that's why I love Patrick Mahomes. Okay. Like, I love that about him. But after this game versus Tennessee, they play at Indianapolis. They take on the Rams. Now, the Rams, you know, maybe Baker Mayfield gets them on a little bit of a roll, but they don't have Cooper Kupp. They don't have a lot of players. Allen Robinson's not there anymore. And then they play at Denver. Like, the Chargers. Unless they Charger should absolutely be in the postseason.
Yeah.
This is their last tough game. Now, I will say this. I love Mike Vrabel, and I think he's one of the better coaches in the NFL. He'll find a way to make sure that last game of the year means something for the Tennessee Titans. Like,
for sure.
They will not lose out. That's not going to happen. But they'll find a way to make it ugly. But you know, this is a home game for the Chargers. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, it's a home game for the Chargers. Yeah. So that means that the Chargers are going to be able to score, which means the Titans are going to have to find a way to put up some points.
Yeah, and look, the Chargers' road to the playoffs, it starts this week. They win this game, it's hard to find a way for them not to make it.
Unless they completely charger.
Yeah. And look, what you said about the Titans offense could not be more accurate. An underdog has nailed this too. They've only got hit Ryan Tannehill's passing yards at 215.5. And frankly, that's probably too high. I have you going lower than 215.5, even with the Chargers defense and the issues in that secondary. And Justin Herbert, you want to talk about a difference in quarterback play and offensive style. His passing yard total, higher or lower, is 305.5 passing yards at Underdog Fantasy. It was 310 last week against Miami. I said go lower. He threw for 367 yards in what was probably his best game of the season. He's riding some momentum. So we'll see how that one goes. That does it for our Super Smash quarterback matchups.
No, I want to talk more. What are we doing?
I'm sorry, my friend. I mean, look, I'm here. I'm with you.
Can I just throw this out real quick before we end the show?
Yeah.
If you had a vote, who would be your league MVP?
Man, my league MVP is still Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Listen, and again, if Jalen Hurts wins it, and by the way, he's the favorite right now at Caesar Sportsbook.
I have no issues to say about this, but go ahead.
Yes. I have no issues with that. Sure. Good for Jalen Hurts. Here's why I would still vote for Patrick Mahomes. You lose Tyreek Hill, and you have the second highest scoring offense in football. And by the yardage, which is the number one NFL stat, they have the number one total offense in football. Name me another quarterback that would lose arguably, I get Justin Jefferson, but Nate, the arguably the most dynamic, game-breaking wide receiver in football, and still lead the league in passing yards by 400-plus yards and several touchdown passes better than anybody else. What I'm saying is, take Patrick Mahomes and put him on the Eagles, his numbers would be off the charts. They're a much better team across the board. Take Jalen Hurts and have him throw to Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster instead of A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. I think we'd see a different Jalen Hurts.
And
it's not a knock. It's not a knock on Jalen Hurts.
For sure.
But somebody is doing more with less.
I think
people, and that to me is the definition of an MVP.
People forget that V in MVP stands for value. Yeah. And when you're looking at the two quarterbacks, you took away a dynamic weapon for Patrick Mahomes and you added a dynamic weapon to Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts didn't get better until you added that dynamic weapon. Somehow Patrick Mahomes has gotten better taking away his dynamic.
They had more explosive plays this year without Tyreek Hill than they did with Tyreek Hill last year. I don't know what else to say to secure the MVP than that.
If it's not going to Patrick Mahomes, it's the reason why LeBron James doesn't win the MVP every year in the NBA. Just fatigue.
Honestly, if it was decent, they'd split it this year. And people are like, how can you split an MVP vote? It happens all the time.
It happened with McNair and Manning.
Exactly right. So kids, know your history. That's all I'm
saying.
And
by the way, at underdog, Patrick Mahomes, 305.5 passing yards higher or lower against the lowly.
They are going Houston to destroy Texans. The Houston Texans.
Against the
Houston Texans. They're pissed off after going up 27-0 in Denver and just sort of letting that one get away.
Yeah.
This will be ugly.
Folks, take the higher on that. Go to Underdog. You got our link is in the comments. You can find it in most of our Underdog Pick'em articles where we give you all the different matchups for Underdog for every single game over at ProFootballNetwork.com. Use promo code PFN. Promo code PFN for Underdog Fantasy. Got a great offer going over there. Get up to a $100 deposit bonus when you use that promo code at sign up. That's promo code PFN. Trey, We're losing weeks on the regular season, but don't worry, everybody. We go through to the draft when we become draft insiders the second the Super Bowl is over. However, we still have so much more fun left on Sundays. And now Saturdays. We got triple header coming up.
By the way, people like, do you like Saturday? I love the Saturday games for two reasons. One, there's no college football, so it gives me something to watch.
Yep.
And two, whenever they start playing Saturday games, it tells me we're close to the postseason. And
that's it.
I am very much there.
Yeah, closer and closer. And we got some Christmas games we'll get into next week. We will see you next week, Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 5 p.m. Pacific. And there's a bunch of other time zones in there I'll never get the math right on. We'll see you next week, everybody.
Sports Ball.